I don't know. Ben's taking attendance, so I don't think what the big deal is. You know Rafi Blumenthal? Ezra is his brother. That's the correct formulation. No. I said it very carefully.
His brother.
I didn't say you're his brother. Sure, I said he's your brother. Okay. All right. New topic. Okay. Normally, kolhas, but this haskal is actually a lot easier. Today, and I don't know if we'll finish it today, but today is sort of one of these classic sugyas. Even if you're, you know, if you're this kind of very standard piece. Let's begin with the Gemara on Sadi Tesa Medveis. It's a very interesting Gemara on so many levels. But before we get to Mikoros, let's first just start read through the Gemara. May I have a volunteer reader who hasn't read yet this semester, who would like to read, who's dying, itching, who's desperate? Avigil, you haven't read yet? You haven't read? Yeah. Oh, you haven't read in a while though. So okay, go ahead. Okay. So obviously, initially it seems to be, what exactly, to use contemporary terminology, what is the value added of Rav Huna here? What does he say that the Mishnah doesn't say? You see, often when you get a statement like this, you look back at the Mishnah and you say, well, did the Mishnah really say what we think the Mishnah has, or did he have a different nusach in the Mishnah? The classic example is the Gemara in Makos in the third parak in Yitzdaf Chafbezim and Beis, where the Mishnah, they talk, it's something like the Ritzua that you give somebody Malkus with. And there's stay Ritzuos, I think, are supposed to be Shel Chamor, right? Why are they Shel Chamor? Why, there are two little whips, two little, you know, strips of leather that attach to the big whip, right? That probably just nick you while the big whip is killing you. And why they made Shel Chamor? Because Yad Asher Koneu V'Chamor V'Spalav. You look in the Nusach of the Mishnah printed in the Bavli, and it says Shtei Ritzur Shel Chamor Olas V'Yodersbov. You look in the Gemara, one of the Amoraim says Shel Chamor. Now, obviously, what is he adding to the Mishnah? And the answer is nothing, and that's why if you look in the Masoras HaShas, it says on the side, Mashma, that he wasn't Goreis those two words in the Mishnah. That's why he's commenting that they were Shel Chamor. So here, you have to look very carefully. There is a difference between this and the Mishnah. What's that? So the Mishnah says, Kibasar Belefes, and here it says, Kibasar Berashe Lefasos. And what are Rashe Lefasos? Well, of course, it's a Machlokas Rashi and Tosos from head to toe, right? Which is it going to be? And Rashi writes, Kirashe Lefasos. Go ahead. What does that mean? What does that mean? Yerek Shalefes as opposed to the I know the Elim, either the roots or the Kelach. You have three choices. It could be the Shoresh, the Kelach, or the Yerek. But the Yerek is like, I never say, I guess, I don't know how broccoli grows in the ground, but like broccoli, the Yerek are the florets on top. Yeah. Right? As opposed to either the stalk or maybe the roots. Yeah.
If only it's on this side up.
What's that?
If only it's on this side up.
Right. So Rashi says, Yerek Shalefes, Velinere. Okay, so according to Rashi, is Rav Huna being makel or machmir? What?
Being makel.
He's saying that when you calculate basar b'lefes, you pick the stronger parts of the lefes. Fine. And what does Tosa say in Barashi of the Fasos? Okay, and of course, what's the pasuk that would be an asmachta for Tosos that the Rosh refers to the Sharashim?
Porer Rosh Velana.
Shoresh Porer Rosh Velana. There you go. Okay, that's just tongue in cheek. That's not a serious riot. But the fact is, Tosos says that the Rosh is actually the bottom. It's the root of the lepus. Okay,
fine. And the pasuk tell you that the Rosh is the stronger part?
Okay, so anyway, fine. So that's what Rav Huna says. The Gemara continues.
So
new topic.
Tosos was saying, like, Rashi, that the root is stronger than the other part?
He doesn't say. Right. He doesn't say. And as it could be, assuming they agree in Metzius, that he's being machmir. He says that you're putting in the more parav part of the lefes, and therefore you're going to need more lefes to be mevatel. Yeah,
I mean,
he doesn't spell that out. That's true. Chaim?
I was going to say, like, Rasha, they both had the same mitzvahs in terms of having a stronger flavor at the base of the plant. The question was,
how do you know? Maybe when Rashi had his grandchildren over for dinner, Rashi used to eat the tips of the little fasos, and Rabbi Natan used to eat the bottom. Part.
No, the question clearly is which way do they look at it, as which side goes up, or is it when you cut it?
From a different terminology, what is the rosh? If the rosh is the source, so it could just as well be shorish, right? It depends whether rosh is really a physical or rosh being the root of things.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, fine. So that's point. That's just a perush on the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says, Masnisan. Okay, so there is a Tosefta there is a Tana who holds that Gin are not Beno Saint Tam. What does it mean, Ain beginning to Beno Saint Tam? So they don't have any flavor. Meaning what?
There's a Yiddish curse that you should grow like a turnip with your head in the ground.
No. Ashkenaz.
Is there really such a thing? Or?
Yeah, yeah, there is.
Is that? How do turnips grow?
Like everything else. The reason that's probably like that is because a turnip is round, so it probably looks like a head.
Okay. And I don't know, does it upside down?
No, the turnip itself like is in the ground, the leaves stick out.
It has a bulb, which is very round.
Like
so it probably looks like a head, as opposed to, let's say, a carrot, which is long and skinny. And
so wait, what? So what does Rashi mean then when he says this? When he says the yarek, does he mean the leaves?
He means the top part.
The leaves, yeah, the top.
Oh, he doesn't? Okay.
He means the bottom also, but that's the part that you would eat.
Are you sure?
I don't think you eat the leaves, right?
No, yeah.
Why not?
I guess you can use those.
It
also sounds like the shirashim would be below the head.
Yeah.
I would assume so.
Right, it seems like Rashi's looking at the actual...
Right, and there are roots underneath that.
He's looking at the actual root itself, you know, and considering the leaves as being the tail. Like when you pull it up, so you've got...
Rashi? Then what is Tosas all? What is
Tosas
all then?
Would be the opposite.
No, shirashim is not the leaves on top.
Probably the roots.
There are roots that come out of the bottom of the turnip itself. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, so which way did they? So which one did they have in mind? You can't tell. It could be odd. They're both in the ground. So, both according to Rashi and Tosas, the rosh is in the ground. No, but I don't think Rashi's talking about the leaves. Now, Avigil's correct. But people don't eat that. Is that really sweet?
It doesn't matter if it's sweet.
No, is it sweet as the fact it's eating, or sweet as the fact it flavors other things?
Rashi says...
Maybe he's referring to the leaves.
Rashi's not mashma that it's actually eating.
But it's masuk miznavo. The znavo, what is the zanav? The zanav is the part in the ground, or it's the little things that come out at the bottom? Okay. It doesn't... We're Mishar Vishishim, so I'm off the hook for the moment. It's fine. Okay, anyway, I'll make sure to file that one away, Stern. Okay? Go ahead. So the Mishnah holds that. So what is the din? What is the implication of Ein Beginning V'no Sein Tam? Rashi writes just very quickly, Ein Beginning V'no Sein Tam, which is a strange thing to say for Rashi, because Rashi later is going to point out that the Shuman Hagid is Aser. Rashi is going to point out the Shuman Hagid is Aser, very few people sent the extra credit from yesterday, but I'll comment at this particular point what I was thinking about. The ones that I looked at, I didn't look at all of them, I only got a handful. No one, I didn't expect you to realize this, but when you looked at the Gemara earlier, no, it doesn't matter, it's too late. When you looked at the Gemara earlier, the Gemara, in that Gemara, Ravina clearly assumed that Yesh Beginim and No Saint Tom. The Rishonim, Tosus points out, Tosus quotes it here in Artsadi the Zion Amid Aleph, that there's a machlokas whether or not, if Ein Beginim and No Saint Tom, whether we're choshish for the Shuman. Meaning, can the Shuman ever flavor more anything more than the Gid itself could in flavor? So Tosus quoted, I think, the Rivam, who said that if the Gid is Ein Beginim and No Saint Tom, you don't have to be choshish for the Tom. You don't have to eat the Shuman. But you don't have to be choshesh for the tam or the shuman, you know, going throughout the gid. So a number of the Rishonim who objected to the Rivam said that if you look on Sadi Zayin Amid Beis, Ravina speaks about the Gid HaNasha which was salted in the Yerech, and if you're going to say that that the Shuman HaGid is Mutter, is not No Saint Tom, if the Gid isn't No Saint Tom, then Ravina must be holding Yesh Beginim No Saint Tom, and that would be Shalal Libid Hilchasa. Tosis doesn't say that, but the other Rishonim said it that we mentioned. Well, newsflash, Ravina does hold that Yesh Beginim No Saint Tom, so they really should have no problem explaining away that Gemara. Ravina on Tzadi, wherever, whatever daf that was, actually holds Yesh Beginim No Saint Tom, and therefore you should have no kasha against the Rivam from the fact that Ravina would be holding Shalal Libid Hilchasa, because Ravina does hold Shalal Libid Hilchasa. That was my he'ara. So here was a raya for the Rivam, or a riot under Akasha against the Rivam. Okay, read my mind. At least if you did, handful of you did it, got to learn an extra half an hour in a Gemara. So good for you. Fine. Anyway, so now, so the nafkamina would be Mashlich of Ashar Mutter, that putting aside the Shuman, the fat that's around the Gid, that if you cooked go to our case of our Mishnah, Yerush and Ispashu Bagid, you can take the Gid out, throw it away, and you can eat the rest of the Yerush. Why? Because Ein Beginim Minos Ein Tam. Now we have a story. Go ahead. Okay, so you gotta imagine, you know, it looks like Rabbi Yehuda Bar Zvina was, I don't know if his name is a pun, but, you know, he was sitting on the doorstep. He's like one of the hawkers who's sitting right outside the Beis Medrash, right? So you gotta imagine, we don't have steps right outside the Beis Medrash, a place to sit, but you imagine you had somebody who's sitting, hanging out outside the Beis Medrash, doing whatever.
Pulling a Mordechai.
And
yeah,
you see
Bashar.
Oh,
okay. Okay. No, that's where the Beis Medrash was. That's in the Beis Medrash. This is outside the Beis Medrash. So he's sitting outside the Beis Medrash, and what happens? No, Bava does mean gate here. Bava has, when you say Bava Metzia, it doesn't mean the middle gate, it means the middle section. There's the word has two different meanings, and they shouldn't be confused. Although, right, okay, so now, I think they're related to each other. I think you have to think about the word Shi'ur, related to the word Sha'ar. I wouldn't be surprised at the connection, but you have semantically related.
And then you have Mesha'arina.
Okay, so he's sitting outside, what happens? Amarle. So apparently he had gone and he asked Rav Chanina, she had a shayla, with obviously something like Yerush and Espashu Bagid. Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina says, what had he paskin? Right? It's like you can imagine someone hanging out, so if guys come up to ask Rav Shechter questions, and then the guys wait for, what'd he say? Right? So that's what happens. You want to get the latest thing. Is the water usher? Is it mutter? Whatever it is that you want to know. So, so anyway, so the Gemara, so what happens? Amarle Sharye Niale, he permitted it to me. So what happens?
Isn't Niale low? There are other
Jerusalems
that have
leak
or
Niale. It could be. Niale, yeah.
Yes.
What does
the word Niale mean?
Low. Yeah. It's a Babli Aramaic form. Okay, so then what happens?
Amarle, Hadar Aile Lekanai.
Bring it back and ask the Shaila again. Okay, he didn't like the answer, so said, go ask him again. So what happens? Omar, what does Rabbi Chanina respond to the guy? He says, what is he making trouble? Go tell the guy who's sitting by the door, said in the get him at same time. Okay, fine. Continue. This is very, very interesting in terms of Sa'ak Halacha. Very interesting. I'm not sure it automatically has to be tied to this particular issue, but there is, as sure as every modern Orthodox Jew knows, I get people who do this, and I don't like answering the question. When someone says to me, I'm not asking as a shayla, but I'm just curious to know what the din is. That I have real trouble swallowing. Usually when someone comes and asks me a shayla, I think that in some cases that, in many cases where I think it's awesome, I'll tell them, look, I'm not holding you by my psak. This is the way I see it. If you want to ask someone else, it's fine to ask someone else. But when a person goes to ask a shayla, if you're going to go ask a shayla, you ask for a psak halacha, and you have to accept that you're bound by it. If you don't like the questioner, then find a different posek. You don't like the person you're asking the question, you find a different posek. You have to find someone who's going to pass you your shaylas. I'm not saying, even though...
Can't research it?
It's nothing. If you are capable of figuring out the halacha yourself, that's fine.
No, I'm saying, but asking a variety of rabbis just to see what the various opinions are.
I'm not talking about someone who's doing abstract research. As if you have a shayla, you know, and if you're writing a paper and you're polling opinions, that's perfectly fine. That's not coming to ask a shayla, but saying, I'm not asking for a psak, right? But if you're coming because you have a shayla you have to have answered, you ask for the shayla, you accept whatever the answer is going to be. There is a Tosefta in Adios, it's quoted in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, I think, of Zion, that Anishal Chacham of Asar, Lo Yishal Chacham Acher V'Yatir. And Lachacham Etime, Lo Yishal Chacham Acher V'Yitaher. And there is a question, there seems to be a question, what exactly is the nature of this prohibition? And there are two ways of understanding it. One way to understand it is it's called Chacham. If it's called Chacham, so you're not allowed, once you ask the Chacham, you're bound by it, you're not allowed to ask another Chacham. It's disrespectful to the first Chacham. And the truth is, another Chacham who would know shouldn't answer the question either. If that's the case, it doesn't really matter whether or not what the answer you received. The other opinion is that no, is that it's a din of shavya nafshi chaticha disur, that when you ask a shayla and you're given a psak, you accepted that upon yourself. It's like it's almost a neder, not quite, but that's what we often understand is related to shavya nafshi chaticha disurah. You've accepted upon yourself as a literally chaticha disur, and you're bound by that psak. The nafgamina between these two opinions, the shach points this out, and I think it's in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The point nafgamina is. Whether if you ask someone and he was matir, whether or not you go allowed to go around and shop around for an iser. Now you laugh at that, AJ, but there are people in this world. It used to be in the normal Jewish world, people would only shop for a heter. That was the normal. That's when people were normal. Today we have a lot of abnormal people too. Maybe even normal people might be abnormal. So that not only do people shop for a heter today, that's kind of standard fare, but people also shop for iserim, believe it or not. And so that is the world in which we live. I'm sure there always were people like that, but they were like batel be'elef. Today, they're not as batel be'elef anymore. So the bottom line is the nafgamina between whether it's kvod chacham versus whether it's shavin ashe chaticha disura is that the chacham was posek lakula, whether or not you're allowed to go ask. The shach himself, I think, leans towards being machriya, that it's only shavin ashe chaticha disura, but actually, if you look in the girsa, in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, it only quotes it one way. You know, nishal chacham v'asar, v'time, and I think there's one more. Maybe just those two, and then you can't ask for someone else for what would be a more lenient opinion. But if you actually look in the nusach of one of the two nuschas of the Tosefta in Adios, I don't remember which manuscript it is. It actually has it both ways, but I'm not sure that the shach was aware of that. Okay. Anyway, so in light of that, what I mentioned that in this case is because the question is to what extent when you ask a shayla, what prerogative does the posek have? Now the truth is, whichever formulation you adopt, the Gemara makes a very, very interesting statement here. Rabbi Yitzchak Bar, that Ravami, Rabbi Ami's position was that Yesh Begim Nosin Tam, and he was Machmir. But when people would come and ask them the Shaila, he would send them to so-and-so, who was Rabbi Shimon Levi's student, who would be Mekel. You will hear stories like this. I mean, I've heard it, I'm not going to mention what area in Halacha, but the Rav, in which the Rav was very Machmir, when people used to come to Shaila, he would send them to Ramosha. I'm not going to say what area it was, but if you knew which area it was, you realize Ramosha wasn't such a makel, and he just maybe wasn't as machmir as the Rav was. But there is such a notion that where there are poskim who will say, and I suspect it's more common by people who aren't classical poskim, who don't want to, you know, buy in the essay, go ask so-and-so, don't ask me. Jason?
This is not probably the text of the Rav, but I guess I'm a little confused as to what's the difference between searching for a heter or searching for an iser and searching for the correct way.
No, we're not talking about an academic enterprise. If someone going around pulling, if
that.
Someone needs a psak halacha, you're not capable of making the decision yourself. So you have someone, and I'm not going to argue.
So I ask you, but when you give me the answer, to me something sounds a little unusual. So I'll go dig a little.
So you come back and ask.
But why is that? Why is that searching more for Heter and Isser than?
No. Not reading and learning and so on and so forth. That means if you ask me, you can't turn around and ask another Rav.
Even if what you said to me sounds a little weird.
Yes. Now, if the question you can ask, not I don't want to go into. I mentioned this just as the element of what element is it, the prerogative of the Chacham. You have to ask the question if someone's Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. You know, if you ask me a Shaila and I tell you something that's against the Gemara, it's against every Rishon that ever was, and it's against the Shulchan Aruch, and none of the Achorim disagree with the Shulchan Aruch, so that's just a Psach B'Toas. That's a Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. What?
But
okay, but the point is that it boils down to the following. Ordinarily, if he has some type of a chush in the first place, he probably would have known walking in, or he could come back to me. A person who doesn't know is not going to bother. The rabbi told me it's usur. It's usur. What it really means is that if there's more than... what it means from an abstract level is that there's more than one position in terms of psak halacha that exists. If there's more than one way of reading the Gemara, one reading the Shulchan Aruch, and I read it one particular way, and you ask me your shayla, you're bound by my interpretation. Right? You don't have to ask me your shayla. But if you do, then whether it's midin kvod chacham or it's midin, midin shaganach shechitich dusur, which would only apply if I'm machmir, so you're not allowed to go ask someone else the shayla. You can research it to your heart's content. You can talk to whoever you want about it, but you're bound by my psak, even if somebody else disagrees with it.
Even if you left out something.
Even if what?
Even if you left out something. That's a different
thing. No, if it's a different situation, it's a different situation. But you're bound by my psak.
What's the source for that? Bound by.
That's the Gemara. That's the Brisa and the Tosefta and Adius. It's quoted by the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. Again, what's the underlying rationale? Either Kvod Chacham, once you ask the Shaila, it's being Mavaze Talmud Chacham when you go and ask someone else the Shaila, or it's this principle of Shavei Nashi Chaticha Di Surah.
Are there different opinions on that?
On what?
On that. If you ask someone else, like a different Rav on being asked, held to that.
So the truth is, it would really depend upon the following. If it's Midin Kvod Chacham, so it's not clear at that point, you could be done whether or not you now have to follow the first Psak. If it's midin shavi anash chadichedi surah, you are bound by the first psach, even if you ask someone else. Okay. But here's also, yes.
Sorry, we do have cases where there's somebody who is in, say, Rosh Hashiva Shir becomes a Rosh Hashiva himself. And at that point.
I'm not the truth is, that's probably true for anybody who was hired in the last. Anybody who's been hired in the last 40 years.
I'm not making any specifics. I'm trying to keep it in an abstract model. But then at that point, not that necessarily the learning of the Talmud will be equal or greater, but that at some point he develops his own derech of halacha. So then let's say that somebody is in a Rosh Hashiva Shir at a younger age, and then just develops his own reading of the Gemara and own reading.
But just because you're in someone's shir doesn't mean you're bound by their piskei halacha.
Right, but let's say that there was one area that
I know if you ask a shayla at a certain point. Look, the assumption here
the
is.
The bracha on corn chips is it hadama or shahakol? And then one person says one way, and then.
Firstly, if you hold it to be din shavinach shetichid yisur, it doesn't apply in that case, because it's neither a chumra nor a kula, so I don't think you can apply it there. But if you hold to be din kvod chacham, that's a different issue. I think that there may be a distinction between someone who asks a shayla at one point and later becomes a talmud chacham and can, in other words, the whole point is and can be machria for oneself.
That's a
different question. I don't know. It's not entirely clear to me, but there may be room for seeing that as different. It's hard if you say shavinach shlichei disura, but you could always say that's sort of an understood tanai in the Kabbalah shavinach shlichei disura, that when I'm not a bar hachi to decide. Then I rely upon so and so. Once I've reached the stage of Horan, whatever level that is, then perhaps I can reopen that decision.
And presumably the Chacham would say, well, yes, if you have now developed even if it's between Torah's Neder, then the Chacham could be like Monte the Net.
Well, but we don't usually people wouldn't normally do that. But I think that you would argue it's a Tanai. It's understood Tanai in Shavu Nashach Tichadisura. Shalom.
Sorry to belabor the point, but if the Pusik himself changes his mind and it becomes a divide of Dua, that he changes his mind. Does that affect if you ask for Pusik at a certain point and the Pusik later changes his mind, but doesn't necessarily tell you, just it's known?
I mean, I think that would be Mutter. You know, I mean, certainly didn't call Chacham, obviously it's Mutter.
Any Mutter to now follow the new Pusik, or to just.
I think you have to make sure that it's really a change. You know, it's really in change. I think so. In other words, I think even by Shavi and Ashatih Hasur, you told your behavior on that person's das. So I assume that would be implicit, you know, an implicit tanai in this, I will call it a neder of Shavya Nafshech Tichadisa.
Whose responsibility is it to figure that out?
To figure out what?
Well, let's say you ask a posik about a certain shaila, and then he changes his mind.
Well, I mean, it depends on what the nature...
Do you follow that psak?
Do you follow which one?
You got a psak. He said, let's say, mutter. Then he decided it was really awesome.
I think that would depend upon whether. I think it depends on whether or not it's whether or not he's whether or not it's you know Toa Bidvar Mishnah the first psak. But some of these are also in the gray area. Some things are clear and some things are gray. What I understand
regularly.
That. I understand. That is also something not the norm. Historically speaking, poskim have generally not been big machmirim. I think I mentioned this before. Because the posek, Lichtenstein's point this out, and you're not the first one. Because if you were a big machmir, people stopped asking your shailas. It's sort of a Darwinian process of natural selection. I'm very serious. That's exactly what happens. Therefore, classically, big poskim were not machmirim. Anyway, so that's the maskana. So apparently, Rabbi Ami, despite the fact that he held it was usur, he felt he didn't want to impose his opinion upon people. He didn't want to cause them hefsed, and rather he sent them to somebody who knew would paskin otherwise. So a certain degree of anova that's worthy of consideration and contemplation. Okay, so now the Gemara concludes. The Helchasa. Okay. What's that?
Is that from the Gemara, or is that Gemara?
Whatever it is, whatever all the Hilchasas are, so they're
and
probably
the
they're probably late.
The
Hilchasa ain't beginning and no same time. Fine. Now, this would seem to be rather simple, except for it's not. Not because the Gemara Pesachim makes life very complicated. It's not really Tosfos, but Tosfos just reminds you of the Gemara Pesachim. And the Gemara Pesachim makes life very complicated. In a certain sense, even though in a perfect world, before you ever learn Chulin and before you ever learn Tarovis, you would learn the Sugim Sachim. Because if you want to talk about Gidan Asha, first you have to talk about the fact that Gidan Asha is Asr to eat. How do you know Gidan Asha is Asr to eat?
Torah.
What's that?
The Torah
says so. Well, okay. Okay. So the Torah says, Al Kain lo yachlu v'nei Yisrael as Gidan Asha. Asher al akaf hayarech ad hayom hazeh ki naga b'chaf yarech Yaakov b'gid hanosheh. Okay, so that's how you know a lot now that you get hanosheh. Okay, so that should solve that problem. What do you do with a get hanosheh? You don't eat it. You take it out. You throw it away. Can you do anything with it? That really wasn't our issue because we're not interested in get hanosheh, but we should be interested in get hanosheh. When you learn the Gemara Pesachim, let's take a look at the Gemara there. Amar Chizkiya. I hope share if you didn't print your own out, and or share with your friend if you printed it out. By the way, when I put these Makoros on here, the reason I do that is so you'll print it out and bring it to share. I know that some of you will print it out and use it in the base medrash, which I guess is okay, but lachatchila you're better off as you figure out on your own, as many of you have figured out on your own, that you're better off with Rashi on the side. But at least for bringing it to Shira so that you all have a text in front of you. Amar Chizkiya. Avigo, go ahead, yeah. Ooh, this is interesting. How do you know the Chametz is Asur Bana? What's that? So it's not so clear. And there is a Tana, Rabbi Yosef HaGalili, who disagrees and says that Chametz Pesach is Mutar Bana. And there is a Tana who says that at least Chemsa Shogai is Mutar Bana on Pesach. Now, don't ask me, how do you get Hana from Chemsa Shogai but not eating on Pesach? Rashi even says says Chametz of Goy is Mutar Bachil on Pesach. Rashi says that.
Not only that, but it's Chametz.
How? So the truth is, that's the question. According to Rashi, is it really Mutar to eat? So you have to say that when you put it in your mouth, you make a kinyan on it. And then, it's Chemsa Shogai Yisrael. No, but even so very clever. But when you put it in your mouth, so that's a question. That's a funny Rashi. Tosfos jumps all of this Rashi, but certainly we paskin chemso shogai during Pesach is mutar bana. I believe that's the way we paskin. Okay, there's one town, Rabbi Yehuda paskins it's aser bana, and that's why he paskins. I think he holds a chametz shalva Pesach is also aser mina Torah, and I don't remember what Rabbi Yehuda holds by chemso shogai. He might even hold it by chemso shogai. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and even.
Okay. Bottom line is we don't follow this Rashi, so that's not a, you know, if you're masukkan, it's one thing. If not, you eat kosher food. So anyway, so minat. But Chizkiya wants to know, how do you know that chametz is also banan on Pesach? Shneimar. All right. So what is this drasha based upon? For those of you who have taken Hebrew 1205 and 1206. Yeachel instead of lo sochal chametz or lo yochal chametz or lo sochlu chametz, it says lo yeachel. And for the grammatically challenged, that is a binyan nifal, and it's a passive. Chametz shall not be eaten. Chametz is masculine, the subject of the verb yeachel. Fine. So Chizkiya darshans that lo yeachel implies lo yehebo hetar achila, which means by any account, even hana'a. Okay. Now, what does that tell you? So the Gemara says, what does that tell you about Chizkiya's biblical exegesis? Go ahead. Taima. Obviously, if it didn't say lo yachal at all, then it wouldn't be mashma anything. But it means if it had said in the binyan kal, lo yochal, lo sochal, lo sochlu, so then that would have been in isra achila only, no isra hana. Go ahead. Upliga. No. In other words, the way they're reading the pasuk, this is like, yeah, you know, the classic Chazal. Yeah. I mean, they say va takum v'hadarta, takum v'hadarta p'nei zaken. Right? You read, you take the verbs when you get that chiastic structure, and you can double it, right? So la gera shem misharecha t'nena v'chala o'machor l'nachri. So when the Torah sets it up chiastically, it's very convenient for chiastically A B B A.
With the people on the outside.
What's that?
With the people on the outside.
Well, and it only works in this case, yes, with the verbs in the middle. So you can double the verbs. Okay, so you get la ger shemeshach t'nena v'achala o machor, because the Torah only said to give it to the ger. And what kind of ger is that, by the way? Obviously, ger toshav, not a ger tzedek. A ger tzedek is muzar on the vela, just like a regular Jew. But to give it to a ger toshav o machor, or sell it to him, or t'nena v'achala o machor l'nachri, you can give it and sell it to or sell it to a nachri. What's a nachri?
A non-Jew
who's not a ger toshav is not exactly what this nachri is. Okay, he's passing through the land or something like that, right? I ask that only because if he's not a ger toshav and he's over the avodah zarah, so how can you sell him it? You should offer him the thing and pull out your gun and shoot him, right? Because he's not allowed. You can't let him live in Eretz Yisrael, right?
As opposed to the ger toshav who you must
enable to live. Mechaye. Okay, fine. So so they darshan it both. So now they say benachri the nachri benesina minayin talmud lomar. Okay, so I didn't give you the rest of the shach entire the Gemara, but let me just make a couple of brief errors here. It would appear from this brisa that whose opinion is Rabbi Abahu following here? Clearly, whose opinion is clearly in the camp of Rabbi Abahu? Rabbi Meir, why? What's that? Okay. No. But from this brisa, how can you tell? They both agree. They're arguing about pratim. There's a fundamental difference here.
Because the whole Nima is from the Bidla.
For whom? Called Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Meir? Which one of both?
Rabbi Meir.
What about Rabbi Yehuda here?
Rabbi Yehuda doesn't learn that particular detail.
Why? What do you mean? Doesn't he say that?
The principle of
I want you to spell it out. No, but how do you know that from looking at this through the passage? By the way, it's only the Gemara that says he learned it from there. Okay, it's a lot of stam work here. How do you what does the Brisa tell you, Jeremy? No. They both hold that nevela is the mutar b'hana. That's not the shaila. Everybody agrees to that. The question is, does this pasuk serve as a source for anything? So only Rabbi Meir serves as a clear source for Rabbi Abahu. Because according to Rabbi Meir, what is the purpose of this pasuk? The purpose of the pasuk is to tell you that it's mutar to sell or give away, which means to get any kind of hana, any which way you like, from a nevela, just that you can't eat it. So according to Rabbi Meir, the purpose of this pasuk, this is the binyan av, that just as nevelas asar b'achila, and the Torah has to tell you that it's mutter to get whatever hana you wish from it, and you may sell it, you may give it, so to all Isurim Shabbat Torah. Rabbi Yehuda cannot learn from this pasuk. Why not? Correct. Rabbi Yehuda says that b'dafka, now it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, could be that any time the Torah says it's asar b'achila, it's mutter b'hana by default. It could be that's a standard position. Then you ask the kasha, why do you need a pasuk by nevela? So the answer is you don't need a pasuk by nevela for Rabbi Yehuda to teach you that it's mutter b'hana. You need a pasuk to teach you that if you're going to give it, if you take a nevela, you may sell it, you may give it to a ger toshav, and you only may sell it to a goy. Okay, this is the way the Gemara interprets this position and understands this is Rabbi Yehuda holds that matnas chinam is asur to an oved avodah zarah. You're not allowed to give a gift to an oved avodah zarah without anything in exchange. Okay, this is maybe you know there are some moral questions to be discussed not in this context about this about what's that about it's based on lo tachanim lo sitn matnas chinam. It's not our issue right now, but the bottom line is for the oved avodah zarah there's an issur of matnas chinam in this context according to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why the Torah tells you. Oh, you can sell to the guy where you're getting something in exchange, you can't give it to a guy. Okay? And there's a mitzvah of Nesina Lager as well. Okay? Yes?
So why do we turn it into a binyan av? Why don't we just say that, no, really it's Asur Bahana, but over here we just have a pasuk.
For Rabbi Yehuda, you mean? Yeah. Well, you can't tell for Rabbi Yehuda. You don't know. No, for Rabbi Yehuda, you know for sure. All you know is that nevela is mutar b'hana, because the Torah clearly is permitting certain hanaos. Certain hanaos are prohibited not because of nevela, but because of other isurim. In other words, the isur of giving it to the guy is not because of nevela. Obviously, you couldn't give a kshera to a guy either. So, for whatever Rabbi Yehuda holds, he cannot be the source, though, for Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Meir's interpretation of this pasuk very clearly could be right in line with Rabbi Abahu, that whenever the Torah says lo yocha, lo socha, lo sochlu, it implies, even though it's only an active voice, it implies an iser hana'a, unless the Torah permits it. And the model for that is nevela, because if lo socha only meant iser achila, not iser hana'a, the Torah just should have said lo sochlu chol nevela, period. The fact that it goes out of its way to tell you to sell, you may sell it to a guy, you can give it to a ger toshav, when in fact, according to Rabbi Meir, you can give it to a guy and you can sell it to a ger toshav if you want. It means that the pratim are not inherently necessary. The specific pratim are not inherently necessary for Rabbi Meir. What's necessary is the principle that you can get hana from it by selling it or giving it away. So for Rabbi Meir, nevela serves as a paradigm for all Isurim in the Torah, at least the way Rabbi Abba would understand. Rabbi Yehuda, you can't tell. Because again, maybe Rabbi Yehuda could come out on either side of the equation. It could come out Rabbi Abba, he could come out like Chizkiah. But either way, whichever way you would hold, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would need this pasuk to tell you that if you're going to get hana from a nevela by transferring it to a non-Jew, you have to do it one of these two ways. Depends which kind of non-Jew. An Oved of the Zara you can only sell it to. A Ger Toshav you're supposed to give it to. Jonathan? The Gemara will work through the Shach of Itaya. He could go according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is not Mukhrach the same way. According to Rabbi Abahu, what's clear is that Rabbi Abahu could not use this as the makor for Rabbi Yehuda. And as if Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Abahu, this is not the makor. So the Gemara comes up with what Rabbi Abahu could say, Rabbi Yehuda's makor would be, but it's not. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't actually say. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't actually say. It's from Lakel of Tashlichon Osav. Oso atamash lachakel avi atamash lach. You know, shari suin shabatar lachakel. What's that? Yes, but I don't think we have that in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. That's the stem of the Gemara working, if I'm not mistaken, unless my memory is failing me. Right. Okay, so that's why I said, that's the Gemara's, how could Rabbi Yehuda learn? Rabbi Yehuda could learn that way. We don't have it that Rabbi Yehuda actually did that way. Chizkiah would certainly have to say like Rabbi Yehuda and deny the other drasha. The Gemara works, goes back and forth how each one would do it. Okay, so now, a few paragraphs later in the Gemara, now I'm Sachem Chafez and Alf. So what the Gemara does, by the way, this is one of those classic sugyas where you seem to have this earth shaking, you know, major you know, when machlokes between Chizkiy Rabbo, and the Gemara goes through question by Isser, by Isser, by Isser in the Torah, where each one seems to hold the same din. They agree on the din. And the only question that winds up being, how do you get to the din? Why is Shara Niskal Aser Bahana? Or, well, that one I think everybody, there are different questions than that. Kidanasha, Chaylev, you know, Dam, how do you know that all these things that are Mutar Bahana are actually Mutar Bahana? That most of these, and they are most of these things. So the Gemara goes through piece by piece and explaining. And at the end of the sugya, I think it's on Daf Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara says, okay, now that you've gone through all this, what's the Nafgamina? They all agree on the din anyway. So there are only, there tend to be a few minor nafkaminas. One of them could potentially be ours that we're dealing with here. But you have a number of sugyas like this. Another very good sugya you want to see the same thing is a very important sugya. I don't think you deal with this more in Hilchos Shechita, so we're not going to do it in Yerideya. But the question of Komilsa de Amar Rachmana Elo Savadi Avin Mahani Avin Lo Mahani. When the Torah says not to do something, if you do it, is it chal? Now, if the Torah says not to eat chazer, if you eat chazer, it's chal. The chazer is eaten. That's not the shayla. It means when you do something that involves a halachic chalos, if you do it improperly, do we say that it doesn't work, that the halachic process doesn't take place? So, you know, one of the everybody agrees on the din, but one of the questions that's asked is, the Torah says that you're not allowed to separate trumas and maasers out of order. So what happens if you separate the maaser rishon first? Is it chal, is the question. Now, physically, you've taken another part, but physical separation doesn't mean that it's kedushas maaser rishon. So that's the kind of thing that the Gemara would talk about. But the Gemara has a machlokas sabai and Rava about kol mosel amar rachmani yavad mahani yavad lo mahani. I think Rava says lo mahani, and the Gemara in Tumur there goes through a whole series of this year, what do you do with this pasuk, that pasuk? And at the end, the Gemara says, well, bottom line is they seem to agree on anything. What's a nafgamina? If they come up with some obscure nafgamina. Okay, so that's what happens in the Sugya. So now, as one of the issues they deal with is Gid Anasha. Now, is it Gid Anasha Mutabana or Asabana? Well, we haven't seen anything to know better. But there is a Mishnah. Stop for a moment in Sachem and look back to earlier in the parak. Sadi Gimel Amid Beis, it should be, is that right? Shaleach Adam. No, mine's on Amid Beis. Shaleach Adam Yerech Ovid Kochavim Shagir Anasha Besocham Inesha Mekoma Nikar. You're allowed to send to a goy on Gir Anasha a Yerech which has the Gir Anasha still in it, because it's recognizable that it's still in it. Now the Mishnah seems to, the Gemara has an extensive discussion here. This, by the way, is the Genevis Das Sugya. The Gemara has a discussion here about difference between whether the Yerech has been cut or whether it's whole. If it's whole and somebody sees it whole, they know that the Gid Anasha has to still be in it. If you see the orange peel intact, you can presume that the orange is still inside. A very basic principle of it, right? If you see the banana solid all around, unless, you know, someone really, you know, I want someone to do that for Purim, okay? Go take a banana peel, take the banana, and then, like, glue it back and really do a nice job on it and see what happens. So you get a bunch of them, see what happens when guys go over to the thing, you know, get a hidden video camera, okay? But normally, under normal circumstances, when you have something that the peel is still around it, when the peel is still around, it's obviously, you know that the thing inside it is inside it. So if you send it to a guy, the assumption is that if another Jew, even if he sees you send the Yerech, because if he doesn't see you send the Yerech, nobody buys meat from a guy. That's how do you know it's kosher meat? And it's, and on top of that, it's basher shnasam and ayin. But if a Jew watches another Jew give a Yerech to a guy, so if it's chatucha, if it's cut up already, he might think that, firstly, he knows the meat, he keeps his eyes on it, and he might think that the Gid Anasha was removed. But if it's a Yerech Shlema, it's mutar mipnei mekoma nikar. Now, does this tell you anything about heter hana, iser hana of Gid Anasha?
Well, I mean, you're allowed to sell to a guy. So you have to get hana from it, clearly.
It doesn't say you have to sell it 201 for
the price. Yeah, you sell him the Gid. Tosfos, I believe, has a little bit of a discussion about this, okay? But anyway, keeping that in mind...
It's not on Narmachlokas, too.
What's that?
His discussion will be telling on Narmachlokas.
So, let's go back to the Gemara Pesachim now. Okay, Masiv, Rabbi Yitzchak Nacha. The Gemara sounds like that Mishnah somehow proves that Gid Anasha is Mutar Bana. But if you say that, like Rabbi Abahu, Al Kain Lo Yoch Luvene Yisrael Es Gid Anasha He, Echad Yisra Achila Vechad Yisra Hana B'mashma, so then, why is Gid Anasha Mutar Bana? So the Gemara says, So what does this mean? I want to tell you, by the way, pedagogically, Ari, what you said to me in the morning, I realized, pedagogically speaking, it was perfectly reasonable. It's just having learned the Gemara so long ago, I internalized it one particular way, which is the clear thing how the Gemara understood it, but nonetheless, sometimes a fresh set of eyes sees something, different possibility. So while I beat you back on it, but nonetheless, it is an alternative possibility read in the abstract. So what does this mean? Kishahutra nevela hi vechel bavagida hutra. What does that mean?
When is the exception of that we just saw on the Papal of Morales about nevela? It applies to Gidim and to Kilim. But they're also looking on, no, just like the nevela.
How do you know that?
That's how Rashi is.
How did Rashi know? How did Rashi know? What does it mean, Kishahutra? You have to see. There's a corollary that's not stated here. Kishanesra nevela, nesra hi v'gida v'chelba. It means that when you, obviously, Rabbi Abo holds that when you have a nevela, the entire thing is aser. Now, not the entire thing, because the bones of a nevela, if they don't have marrow in them, are not aser. The hooves of an avail are not aser. The horns of an avail are not aser. The hair of an avail is not aser. But obviously, not just the basar of an avela is nevela. The chelev of an avela is nevela. It may be chelev. The shuman of an avela is nevela. The gid of an avela is nevela. Dam is an interesting question. I think the dam is not. But to question one of the, I believe if you eat dam of an avela, I think you violate dam, not nevela. But I'm not 100% sure. But the point is that Rabbi Abo was saying the following. The Torah was matur you selling the nevela to a guy. The Torah doesn't say you may sell the nevela to the guy chutz mit demei gid and demei chelev shabbat. The Torah says you can sell the nevela to the guy, period. So the assumption is that when the Torah was matur getting hana from the nevela, it was matur getting hana from the entire nevela. And that means that any part of the nevela, any part of the nevela that was aser because it's nevela is mutter to get an off from. Now, if you had a part of the nevela, if let's say there were a special gzeres hakosef separately, that you're not allowed to get hana from bones, any bones, the din of nevela does not apply to bones. Why? Because it's not achila; they're not edible. They don't have an edible taste. So if that were the case, when the Torah would be mater nevela, it wouldn't be mutter to get hana from the bones. It'd only be mutter to get hana from those things that were aser because they were included in the iser nevela. The Torah aser nevela. The Torah was mater nevela bahana. That which it asered bachila, it's mater bahana. So Rabbi Abo holds that just as the Torah asered basar nevela, chelav nevela, gid nevela, and obviously the gid and the chelav have two isurim, not just one. When the Torah was matir selling it, it was saying that there was no isur hana on anything involved. And therefore, there's no isur hana by basar nevela, there's no isur hana by gid nevela, there's no isur hana by chelav nevela. Now, here's where one could stop and say, well, okay, but maybe that only applies to nevela. Could you then turn around and say, but gid of a ksheira is asur? Or chelav ksheira is asur bana? So that's where Ari was, what Ari and Dani were suggesting. Although it seems to me posthumous that it doesn't make any sense for a simple reason, which is it's a kal v'chomer. If a gid, which has two isurim rachav on it, is mutter b'hana, then a gid which only has one isur rachav on it, it certainly should be mutter b'hana. I thought that was posthumous, but. And it's I think clearly how the Gemara does understand. But okay, there was another way to perhaps to have read that drasha, at least in the abstract. So basically, Rabbi Abo holds that because gidden, when you eat gid anasha of nevela, any gidden of nevela, it's not when we say imigim nasin tam yeshvim nasin tam, means any gidden. And obviously, there are some gidden which are probably not really gidden, or they're softer, so everybody agrees yeshvim nasin tam. But it means stam gidden of an animal. If you say that Rabbi Abo would say that all gin of an nevela are aser to eat because they're nevela, they're all edible. It may be a little harder to chew on, but nonetheless, they're all aser because they're nevela. Now, when the Torah is matir, The nevela, it's matir everything that it asered to sell. Asers bachila matir to sell, and therefore the gira nasha of a nevela is a motor bana. The chela of a nevela is a motor bana, and therefore you know that gira nasha is a motor bahana. That's how you know from the fact that the Torah was matir selling the entire nevela. Which, yes.
I mean, but does that mean that it's only, I mean, would that therefore imply that the only the gira nasha of a nevela is motor bana?
No, that's what the question that was raised, and the answer is no. It's a kal v'chomer. If the gid, which has two isurim on it, nevela and gid, is mutar bahana, kal v'chomer when only has one isur on it, because there's more isur, it's therefore because it's more asur b'achila, you get two sets of malchus. Now it's mutar bahana. In fact, you'd have that'd be really fascinating, Ari, because what would turn out would be that when the behema before it was nisnabla, the gid anusha was asur bahana, and now that it was nisnabla, the basa becomes asur b'achila and the gid becomes mutar bahana.
I thought that's why you need the pasuk to come and tell you that.
No, you need the pasuk to come and tell it. The pasuk tells you that all parts of nevela are mutar bahana. Right. That's how the Gemara I think understands it.
But isn't that
a technical question. That's simply a technical question of where you get multiple malchus. When we say enes achal lisser, there are two isurim there. The isur number one, it's waiting and it's hiding an ambush to fall. If the first isur disappears, the second comes along and is chal. And number two, the Gemara says there's a nafgamina between violating an isur where there's one isur versus two isurim, even if ain't chal isur and lakover bein rishayim gemurim. The guy who violates an avera where there's really two isurim there, but one was not chal, is a bigger avarian than the person who violates one that there was only one there. Okay. Then that could be midin psychology, not necessarily midin what makes a person a Russian, not necessarily midin din. But okay. Anyway, bottom line is that I could work out the scenario. The answer is the nevela is chal on the gid because it's an iser kolel. Since the iser nevela asers the baser, it asers the gid at the same time. Okay? The gid was aser mibirasa when it was created. Okay? And
So then if I get a nasha, then I should only get
Malchus
on the
get a nasha? Yes. Okay,
get a nasha.
You get two malchus for it.
So why should you get two? Because what is this nabla?
Since the nevela is chal on the rest of the basar, it's chal on the git as well, and therefore eating that git is now git and nevela. Okay, that's not our. Let's list out. It's not our sugya right now. So anyway, so the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Abba, you'll say hutra nevela hi v'chavu v'gida hutras. Now the Gemara has a problem. Hanicha. So what's the Gemara's question?
It's contingent upon your assessment that it has tam without that.
Why? Why?
Because without it, then...
If there's no tam in Gidden, then...
Then
it's not like available.
Then it shouldn't matter whether or not...
Spell out why.
Enjoyment.
And therefore, it's not Asur Mitzad. No, forget me, it's not Asur Mitzad. Nevela. Nevela has to be something that's edible. So if the Torah never Asurd the Gid Mishum Nevela, then when it's Matir selling Nevela, you don't have a Raya that it's being Matir. In other words, the Torah is Matir what it Asurd. It Asurd eating anything that would be anything within the Nevela that has Tam. When it's matir selling that. I know the Torah doesn't spell out the other parts, but the point is, lo sochlu chol nevela lager asher b'shrachten avachalah. What is the omachar lachmi? What is the Torah matir selling? It's matir selling or giving away what it asered. What did it aser? Only those things that are called nevela. So if ein beginim in osein tam, it means firstly, before you get to the question of selling hana whatever, if you eat the gid anasha of a nevela, if ein beginim in osein tam, how many sets of malchus do you get?
Two.
If ein beginim in osein tam and you eat the gid anasha of a nevela, better. If ein beginim in osein tam and you eat a gid of the nevela, which is not the gid anasha, how many sets of malchus do you get?
None.
It's not usur, it's like eating the bone. If ain't beginning minos same time, it's like eating the bone of a nevela. So if you eat now the Gid HaNoshe of an Nevela, what's the din? Then you get one set of Malkus for what?
For
Gid HaNoshe. You don't get for Nevela. So it means that the Torah never asered Gid Mitzad Nevela, and then when it was a Matir Nevela, it wasn't Matir the Gid. You don't know that it was Matir the Gid. And therefore, if you hold that Ein B'Gidim B'No Sein Tam, according to Rabbi Abahu, why should Gid HaNoshe be Mutar B'Ana? What's the Matir? The Torah said, Lo Yochlu V'Nei Yisros Gid HaNoshe Echad Aser Achid V'Ech V'Sanah B'Mashma. Now the Torah says you can sell Nevela, but that doesn't help you because Gid HaNoshe of Nevela is not, it's not Nevela. It's just Gid HaNoshe.
I mean, does this make any sense? I mean, it sounds
like... I think so.
No, because even beforehand when we were saying that we're going to connect, we're going to learn the heter of having hana by Gid HaNoshe from Nevela, it wasn't saying that it was because it's us or it's because the Gid HaNoshe is us or because of Nevela that we're therefore going to connect it to. It's saying that whatever, they have something in common, be whatever it may be, and therefore we're going to just like Gid HaNoshe, Nevela you're allowed to get hana from. So to
No. What the Gemara understands the pasuk is saying is that when the Torah says Lo Sochu Chol Nevela La Gerash Erev Shana Chala, it's not just the dimyon between Nevela and Gid HaNoshe. No, it's saying that I can take the Isser Nevela, everything that's Asser Mishum Nevela, I am not allowed to eat, but I am allowed to sell. If Gid HaNoshe is Asser Mishum Nevela, if Chela is Asser Mishum Nevela, I am allowed to sell that, I may not eat it.
Well, why would there be a specific prohibition written in the Torah separately in regards to Gid HaNoshe, if it's just part of the broader Nevela?
No, Gid HaNoshe is a Gid HaNoshe whether it's Nevela or not.
Okay.
You shecht an animal properly, that's when the Gid HaNoshe normally comes up.
Right.
But the point is, when the Torah asered Nevela and was matir at Bahana,
yeah,
the assumption of the Gemara is that whatever it asered Mishum Nevela, whatever gets a shame Nevela, din Nevela,
yeah,
regardless of its previous status, also gets a heter Hana.
But that doesn't that go back to Ari's question in terms of why this heter Hana would only apply?
But I'm telling you, once you know that the Gid HaNoshe of Nevela is a Mutar Hana, you know that the Gid HaNoshe of anything is a Mutar Hana, Mikal v'chomer. The Torah tells it to you by Nevela, it's Megala to you by Nevela, the fact that the Torah doesn't single out any part of the din of Nevela as an exception teaches you that the Torah regards the Gid HaNoshe of Nevela and by Mikal v'chomer, the Gid HaNoshe generally is Mutar Hana. But that only can be derived if the Torah asered a Gid Mishum Nevela and now is matir it. If Gid HaNoshe wasn't Bechlal Lo Sochul Chol Nevela because it has no tam, then it's not Bechlal the Heter either. Rafi?
So if you have Eim Gid HaNoshe tam, can you ever be Chayav for eating a Gid HaNoshe?
Yes, because it's Gzeres HaKasav. That's what the Gemara says.
But in what case?
It's not any Gid HaNoshe, for Gid HaNoshe itself. The Gemara says if you hold Ein Begin, did we just, is it in this Gemara? No, where is it? Where's that line? Eitz Ba'alma Vatora Asratu. That's the expression. Maybe it's earlier in the parak. That the Gid HaNoshe is, it's like a piece of wood, for all intents and purposes. And nonetheless, the Torah prohibits it.
Right. Also, is it really the same thing as not having tam and not considering achila? Is that really, can we consider it the same thing?
Yes, for normally surah achila, something that has no tam. Just like we just learned in Yeridea, that something that's pogum legamre, even though it has flavor, it's disgusting, it's rotted, it's totally rotted. Nevela that's rotted, it's also learned from this pasuk, is motor b'achila even. It's not called achila. Why? Because it's not edible. Ari?
I think there are two ways though, to say that the man that versus Eim Gid HaNoshe Tam does hold that it's really motor b'hana. Either you could say that Rabbi Shimon just doesn't hold like Rabbi Abo. He holds Eim Gid HaNoshe Tam, but he doesn't.
No. Time out. Let's just read to the end of the Gemara, and then you can make your point, okay? 1 second. Just hold off. Avi, you'll finish, and then you can have the floor, okay? In other words, according to Rabbi Abahu, if Rabbi Abahu wants everybody to agree with him, remember, the Tanaim don't speak on this issue. There's a machlokas Rabbi Abahu and Chizkiya how to read scripture. So, if in fact you're right, Rabbi Abba, that lo yochal osochla sochlas mashma iser hana as well, and ain beginim in osein tam, what should follow from that is that the Gid HaNoshe should be aser b'hana. But what do you do with that mishnah? So now the Gemara says man shamis le. All right, so let's just explain that for 1 second. It's a Mishnah, I mean, it's not a Mishnah, but there's a Mishnah right after where we're going to stop in Hulin on Kuf Amid Beis, the Mishnah says there's a machlokas whether or not Giran Asher applies to a non-kosher animal. What do I mean by that? Means whether the whole issue of Giran Asher was ever stated in connection with Behemoth Tmeya. Rabbi Yehuda says it is. The Chachamim say no. In this brisa, Rabbi Yehuda is assuming that he's assuming two things. He's assuming, number one, that Giran Asher applies bechlal by a non-kosher animal. Which, for example, Chelev does not apply by a non-kosher animal. Doesn't even apply by a chai. It only applies by Shor Chesef Eis. Okay? So the question is, does Giran Asher apply by a non-kosher animal? So that Rabbi Yehuda says yes, number one. And number two, he says that Gid has flavor. And therefore, when the Torah... Let's forget Giran Asher. Any Gid. If you eat any Gid of a non-kosher animal, a pig's Gid, okay? If you eat a pig Gid, and not a Giran Asher, do you get Malkus or not? For eating Behemoth Tmeya. Depends. Whether Yesh begin in Osa Tam, Ein begin in Osa Tam. If you want to eat the bone with no marrow of a pig, that's not Asher. Have you ever tried?
No.
Okay. So anyway, bottom line is that anything that has no tam, we call tam basar, but it doesn't taste like meat. It has to taste like food. Anything that has no tam in a pig in a non-kosher animal is not asar b'achila. It's not edible, but that's sort of why. So if ein begid min osein tam, there's no malchus, certainly no malchus, and maybe no isser at all, for eating the gid of a chazir, of a behemoth tmeya. Now, what about for eating the gid? Let's say it's the gid anosha behemoth tmeya. What's the din there? So that depends upon a separate din. Those gid anosha, if there's no tam in gidin, is asr because the Torah said it's asr, and you get malchus because the Torah said don't eat it. The only question is, what animals does, what is it called, the gid anosha, as opposed to just another gid? So therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda says two things. He says, number one, gid anosha applies to behemoth tmeya. Number two, he says yesh begidim in osein tam. So even if gid anosha didn't apply to a behemoth tmeya, you would still get malchus for eating the gid anosha for eating behemoth tmeya. It's like eating a pork chop, so you eat a pork gid. What's the difference? Whereas, and if you hold the gid anosha applies, so you get two. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yehuda mechayev shtayim. If you eat two, you eat the gid anosha of a behemoth tmeya, you get malchus for behemoth tmeya, you get malchus for gid anosha. What does Rabbi Shimon say? Rabbi Shimon poter. What does Rabbi Shimon obviously have to hold? What does he hold about gid menosein tam and menosein tam? You must hold emigid menosein tam. That's why you don't get malchus for eating pork. Because it's not edible. And but Magabi the Gin of Ginan Asha, what does he hold? It doesn't apply to non-kosher animals. Doesn't apply to non-kosher animals. Fine.
Why would you get any malchus?
You don't. Rabbi Shimon Poter. Rabbi Shimon Poter. There you go. So who's the mandarma that says Amy Gim Nosen Tam? Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon, go ahead, Avigil. Hachinami. Okay, so it's a perfect two-shtel. Everything lines up exactly the way you want it to do, what you want it to come out. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Yesh Begidin, Menosein Tam, presumably, Rabbi Yehuda don't care as much. Rabbi Shimon holds that a Gid Anasha, in fact, is Asher Bana, because he holds Ein Begidin Menosein Tam. And therefore, if anything, it looks like Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Abahu Badafka. Okay, but certainly Rabbi Abahu could explain, he could explain the Mishnah. The Mishnah, Shita in the Mishnah, is Rabbi Yehuda, that Yesh Beginim in Osein Tam, and that's why Gid Anasha is Mutar Bahano. And that's why the Mishnah says, the Mishnah is not Akasha against Rabbi Abahu. Shalom.
Doesn't it seem a little illogical to say, the whole basis of Rabbi Abahu's Drasha is on Lo Yochal. And you're saying that means it's Asur to eat and Asur Bahana, but since there's no Hana in eating it, how can you say that from that same word you're going to get that there's a Hana? The Achila itself doesn't even have Hana.
I don't want to get, if we were doing the sugya, I would sort of get in and address that question. There's a lot to talk about in that question of what is the meaning behind Rabbi Abahu's drasha. But since it's a little secondary right now, I'm going to push that one aside. We might touch upon that in Basa Bahal. The Rama writes a very interesting comment in the Sefer Mitzvahs about the nature of the Isra'ana and Basa Bahal, there and in the Kun Lefla. Okay. So anyway, okay, so that seems nice. That seems very reasonable to me. It's machlokas atanayim whether Giran Asher is mutar b'hanah. Fine. The Mishnah of the Gemara thinks, it doesn't really matter at this point, but the Mishnah is mashma, the way the Gemara read it in Chulin, as saying that Giran Asher is mutar b'hanah. Rabbi Abba would say that's Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. Yesh beginim in osei tam, and kashahut shrahi, hut shrahi v'chel bavagida. Fine. Now, everything would be nice, except for let's take a look at what does Tosfos say. Hilchos Ein Beginim Eino Ein Tam. Okay, Avigil, you may as well finish up, because... Okay. In Chulin, the second Tosfos from the bottom. Okay, that seems to follow logically from the Gemara. Tosfos is assuming, obviously, what, in terms of the Machlokes Chizki and Rabbi Abbahu, though? You're assuming like Rabbi Abbahu, because the whole discussion doesn't get off the ground if you hold like Chizkiah. If you hold like Chizkiah, it says, Lo yochlu ne'isos ger ashe, period. There's no isra hana'a, b'mashma, you don't have to talk about anything. Okay, now, he says, Dehachi mefaresh. The Gemara asked the Kasha, Mushani. Yeah, it is also fine. Okay, now Tosfos has a Kasha. Tosfos really boxes himself into a corner because Tosfos Kedarko Bakodesh is going to defend the practice of Kila Kedosh Shel Ashkenaz. So he says that it's mutter if the git is still in there, it's mutter to sell the Nikor Basar. In other words, what they did was they trabered. When you traber, what traber means removing the git or the chelev. I assume it means to be chotet. It means to burrow in. What? Yiddish word. To the best of my knowledge.
Really? I don't know. I always thought it was English.
Sure, T-R-A-B-E-R. Did you check it in Webster's? No, I don't think so. I think traber is a Yiddish word. So it means to be chotet. It means to dig in after. The reason why, unfortunately, we don't get to enjoy filet mignon, as a general rule, is because trabering the hindquarters, especially to get all the chelev, not as much the git, I'm told, but to get the chelev basically destroys it. It's worth chopped meat once you're done with it, which is such a darn shame. But that's the way it is, and therefore but obviously we have that luxury because we can just sell to the guy, and we sell the whole hindquarters to the guy. However, Tosfos once upon a time, you know, in the holy days of Europe, Jews were pretty poor. And it really wasn't an option to just throw away the hindquarters or give them away and sell them more cheaply. You didn't want that volume of meat. So what they did was they trabered. It's a very important skill, which is probably being lost.
Still back in time, they still do it in Israel.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if they do it in Israel. You mean Argentina, they do it. Or matter where they do it. But yeah. Yes, assuming that what I actually once had as a filet mignon was really a filet mignon. It was very good. Best piece of meat I ever tasted. That's why, on that assumption, it's a little tragic, but it's the way it is. So Tosfos says that when they used to do Nikor, so you had this like segment of meat with the Gid Anasha Me'ura in it, they would sell it to a guy. Well, aren't you getting enough from it? So Tosfos says, no. The guy is not buying. When he pays you, he's paying for the meat. The Gid has no time. He's not interested in that. Okay, that might be true. I mean, sure. He wouldn't care whether you have the Gid Anasha in there. He just wants the meat is not what's usable to him. Okay, so now Tosfos says, "Umihu." So now, what did Tosfos just do? He created a big problem. Why did he create a big problem? He's undone the entire kasha of the Gemara Pesachim. How did Gemara Pesachim know that Gid Anasha is mutter bana? Kesholeach Adam Yerech Lenachri. Doesn't that sound exactly what Tosfos is doing? In fact, I can make a better argument for the Mishnah than for Tosfos. For Tosfos, there's so little there that presumably the guy is counting the Gid. By the Yerech, it's so there's one little tiny piece in that the guy himself might not even throw at. That. You're not getting Hanah from. So Tosfos says, what? So he says, Umihu, that's his kasha. You have to realize he doesn't spell Miu, Yerech Shlema.
Miu, Yerech Shlema, also the Shlema, the Rabbi Tokotim. Mishim et Havi Bos Tereg Shu Shalem.
So why does he say that line? Exactly what we just said. He knows you're going to ask the kasha from the Mishnah, which the Gemara says is only if it's mutar bana, right? He says, "Umasnisan the shalecha the melech ola kochavim muki lahasam the laka Rabbi Shimon the Amar im begidim no sein tam begid anasha aser bana." Right. So if you're going to explain the Mishnah as being not according to Rabbi Shimon, because the Mishnah that shalecha the melech anachri is assuming that sending a gid is sending a hindquarters with the gid in it is mutar. So then, how can I turn around and say I'm allowed to sell it to a guy? And he's not getting Hana because the guy is only interested in the part that is Tom. So Tosa says something really astounding here. He says it's because it's a Yerach Shalem. I have to say the Teretz of Tosas is very difficult. Why? Firstly, does everyone understand what is Tosas' Kasha? Tosas' Kasha is motivated by Jewish practice. Tosas' Kasha starts with the following. A. Ginan Asha, and Ein Beginim No Sein Tam, not the Gemara Paskins. B. Based upon the Gemara Psachim, if Ein Beginim No Sein Tam, and assuming you hold like Rabbi Abahu, Ginan Asha is Aser Bano. C. Kehila Kadosh of Ashkenaz, his practice was when you chotate and you remove the gid with other basar around it to sell that mixture to the guy. And how can that be permissible? Gid on Ashes Asavana. D. Tosa says because you're only selling to the guy the parts. He's only interested when he pays money for the parts that actually have tam. He might eat the gid on Ashe, but it doesn't really, I mean, you know, when you get like sinews, it makes eating meat, in fact, unpleasant. So the guy is not giving you money for that. Well, then Tosa has a problem. Because if, in fact, when you send a mixture of meat and gid to a guy, it's not Asr B'hana, you're not Ninnena from the Gidon Asha because he's not interested in the Gidon Asha, it just happens to be there, it's stuck to it. Then in the Mishnah of Shalech Adam Yerach Lenachri, the Gidon Asha B'socha, why did the Gemara think that was a riot, that Gidon Asha is Mutarana? You're doing the same thing, Jews of Ashkenaz. You're taking not even the whole Yerach. There's much less meat, and you're sending it to the guy, and you're telling me, Tosas, that that's not a violation of getting Hanah from the Gid. So why is the Mishnah getting Hanah from the Gid? But the Gemara said the Mishnah is against Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah is assuming that Gid Anash is Mutar Bana. It's Shelo Alib with Rabbi Shimon. So Tosas says, what? Again, he says, that's that line. Umihu Yerashlema Asur Lishloch La'akum, like the Mishnah, if Gid Anash is Asur Bana, Lefi Shemiskabed Botfei Kushu Shalem. It means because when you send a nice big hindquarters, not like some rinky-dinky meat, but because it's mother, you get hanah from that. So the truth is, if you had asked me, you're not getting hanah from... I'm bothered by a question. You're not getting hanah, you want to say?
I think it's you're getting hanah because he didn't have to rip out the gid.
Yeah. It's not. In other words, if you could microscopically, you know, vaporize that gid, the erech would still be full. It's just the process of getting the gid out is what makes it not shalim. It's not that the gid, it's not that, it's the, in other words, not treburing it is what makes the Yerech look the way it does. Not the gid itself.
I think that's what they're saying. They're getting hanah. They would have paid you not without the gid. That's like the hanah. They'd rather get the piece whole.
But again, they're paying you not for the gid. They're paying you for not ripping it out. If you could vaporize the gid, they wouldn't care.
Avigal? It's possible they prefer to cook it and use it as a whole Yerech and then just feed around the gid after it's cooked and then
But what hanah are they getting from the gid? It's not like the gid is not like a bone that you're going to grab and like a rib steak.
Because in order to remove the gid, you have to cut a piece of meat. You'd rather cook a piece of meat as a whole piece of meat.
I understand that, but you're not really getting hanah from the gid in that case. The reason why you can't remove the gid is because you'll destroy the meat. But that's not getting hanah from the gid. That's just not removing the gid. So it's not really the chiluk that Tosas makes. I haven't looked another. I wasn't really going to explore it. This is not the piece that interests me so much. But it's something you can explore further to see if the other Rishonim talk about it. That's not the part that I'm more interested in. Here is the connection between Ein Beginim No Sein Tam and the Isra Nav Gid Anash, as you'll see in a moment. Okay, but that's something you could explore further. Whether or not that distinction Tosas is making really holds. Okay. Now I'm going to leave you with the problem. How does the Rambam Paskin? This is so classic Rambam. So classic Rambam. This is what makes learning the Rambam fun, right? Yes, Chaim.
He passes against us.
So let's read the Psak of the Rambam. Chaim, go ahead. You can read now. Right. Let Avigal finish since you have a cold too. Anyway, spare your voice.
I don't have the Rambam.
It's on the sheet. Oh. Chavruso misuso. There you go. Go ahead. Okay. So how does the Rambam pasken about Heter Yisranav Gid Anasha? It's mutter. Fine. Point one. Lefikach. These are two different dinim. The first din is the one a function of hanah. The second one is to give it before Yisrael. The ain. Oh, okay, fine. So that's the two dinim, two kulas in the Mishnah. One, it's mutav hanah. Number two, we're not afraid another Jew will eat it without taking out the gid. Lefikach. So we know that Gid Anasha is in fact Mutar Bahana. Okay, now the Rambam also paskins, although I didn't put it here, that ain't beginning minos ain't tam. That Rambam will be in Halacha Yud Zayin. Okay, of the same of the of Perek Tesvav Machalos Asuros. Fine. So far, even though we didn't see that other one, I apologize. I should have put that on. Is the Rambam holds that Kiran Asha is Mutar Bana, and number two, the Rambam holds that Ein Begim No Sein Tam. Now, there still is an escape hatch for the Rambam. What would that be?
It's not Oser.
Ari? If he holds like Chizkiya, not like Rabbi Abahu. The Rambam, the very next Halacha says, Kol Makom. Okay, so now the Rambam has really driven the last nail into his coffin, right? Because he holds Yesh Ein Begim No Sein Tam. He holds Kiran Asha's Mutar Banan. He holds like Rabbi Abahu. Or I should say he holds like Rabbi Abahu, and nonetheless he still holds like Kiran Asha. It's Mutar Bana. But according to the Gemara, if you hold like Rabbi Abahu and you hold Ein Begim No Sein Tam, you hold the Kiran Asha's Asur Bana. So that is the problem to understand where in the world is the Rambam coming from. Ari, you want?
We had a thought here. It doesn't seem like the Rambam is posting exactly like Rabbi Abahu in Pesach. Because Rabbi Abahu says the whole reason that we know that Chelev and Kiran Asha are Mutar Bana is because they come under the rubric of Vela, but the Rambam goes ahead and quotes a separate source for Chelev being Mutar Bana, and he quotes a separate source for Kiran Asha being Mutar Bana.
Okay.
He's not using Rabbi Abahu as a reason.
The Gemara says what Rabbi Abahu would hold. You know, that part is not Rabbi Abahu, what Rabbi Abahu says. So the Rambam may just say that this notion of Hutrahim Chalba Begida is Mipia Kabbalah. That's what he terms it. You could have said better, but there's no way for you to know this if you had gone looking. If you look up the Rambam on Chametz, on Chametz it sounds like he passing is like Chizkiya. He quotes
the Rambam does hold that.
Okay, so did you do the last Gemara? Hafkimom and Aleph. So what? Okay, so before you go on to fancy Terutim, for tomorrow in Shir, we will do that last Gemara, and then we will, as well as you should look, I didn't ask you to look at the Kesa Mishnah or the Bagia Mishnah, either way, on this Rambam. And that will complete our discussion of the Rambam in this piece of the sugya, and then you can go on in the Gemara, we'll do the next two Tosafim hopefully tomorrow also, and then from there we have still to do one last big topic in the sugya. So again, for tomorrow, finish these Makoros and the top two Tosafim on Kufa Manal.
You're all
in
suspense till tomorrow.